welcome back. So I'm just going to immediately turn the floor over to Marika and Margie. So why don't you all take it away, and I assume we have plenty of time for questions, right? Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Go ahead.
I'll get started. Hello, everyone. I'm going to be talking to you about the a preliminary issue report on the UDRP. We've published that recently, and I'll give you an overview of what it says and perhaps give you guys some time to ask some questions. Okay, so
the conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, should we disconnect at this time? You may begin.
Thank you. In February, the GNSO Council asked for an issue report on the current state of the UDRP, and it just asked us briefly to cover a couple issues, how the UDRP has addressed the problem of cyber squatting to date and identifying any insufficiencies or inequalities, look at the definition of cyber squatting and suggest a possible way forward if there is to be a PDP on the UDRP. So what I did was, as I got assigned to this task, it was a pretty large project to try to figure out, you know, what the current state of the UDRP was. So fortunately, the council put together a drafting team to assist me, and we conducted a webinar on May 10th to kind of hear from different experts in the field their views on the current state of the UDRP. We also followed up with a questionnaire to the UDRP providers to solicit information for the preliminary issue report. And if you're not familiar with the word preliminary issue report, this is a new concept that's going to be hopefully adopted by the GNSO Council for new PDPs. We've taken the approach of publishing our preliminary thoughts for public comment and hearing from the community, and then we'll publish the final issue report after Singapore. And so this is a way to kind of test out some of the recommendations and to get feedback on whether we've made any mistakes in our assumptions. And so that's the purpose of publishing a preliminary issue report at this time. If you really want to hear more about the UDRP, we have a session tomorrow from 8:30 to 10:30 where we'll start soliciting reaction to the recommendations in the issue report. And then once the issue report is published after Singapore, the GNSO Council will vote to decide on whether they want to initiate a PDP on the UDRP. So briefly, as we looked at and listened to the different viewpoints in the webinar and in publications regarding the UDRP, staff feels that it is a success, that the policy is working, that the number of complaints that have been filed over the last decade, 30,000, have really provided an alternative for parties that are interested in resolving disputes related to cyber squatting. We do feel that it is a viable alternative to litigation that existed prior to the adoption of the UDRP. The UDRP has served as a model for some CCTLDs, and the providers have been very good about investing significant resources in educating the public about the UDRP and publishing decisions. And so it's very transparent in that sense because there's a lot of information out there on how the UDRP is implemented and how it's interpreted. In the webinar, what struck me, and a lot of you may have listened in, and we had John Berryhill actually participating in the webinar, it was surprising to me that a lot of the viewpoints were consistent across the different stakeholders. It wasn't just the IP community that felt that the UDRP was effective. We did hear from Respondents Council, from UDRP providers, from Brand Council, and even though it's not perfect, I mean, nobody would say that the UDRP is perfect. It is felt that it is effective compared to traditional litigation, and it is it provides a fair and flexible way for these disputes to be handled. Some of the speakers actually noted that some of the theories have evolved over time. So over the last decade, you've seen decisions deal with things like domain tasting, reverse domain name hijacking, all sorts of things that weren't really anticipated right when the policy was adopted. And the transparent nature of it makes it a lot more affordable for complainants and respondents to really deal with these issues. And so the viewpoint, at least from the, you know, I write the word consensus, and that was challenged over the weekend. I think what I meant, you know, probably meant to say, and we'll probably clarify, is that, you know, among the those that participated in the webinar, is that, you know, that a PDP could undermine the effectiveness of the UDRP. And so it just seemed that, at least from those various viewpoints, that it might be problematic to initiate a PDP at this time. There were some that felt that if the UDRP was to be reviewed at all, that you should focus on process improvements as opposed to really looking into the policy itself. So the staff recommendation that's listed in the preliminary issue report is that we recommend against initiating a PDP at this time. We heard the viewpoint of the community that the UDRP should not be tampered with at this time. And so that's our recommendation, that it's probably best not to initiate one now. However, if the council does feel that there should be some action taken with regard to the UDRP, we suggest an alternative approach to convening a team of experts that could really focus on the process issues. As you'll see in some of my next slides, the process issues are very complex. And we feel that that it might make more sense to have, you know, a dedicated team of experts, not just IP lawyers. I'm not thinking IRT, for example, which that was, you know, challenged the composition of that group. I'm talking about experts from all aspects of the community that deal with the UDRP. So it could be, you know, respondents' counsel. It could be those that are worried about fair use and free speech. But just those that really have an in-depth understanding of the policy, as opposed to those that may not be as familiar with it, to come up with process-related recommendations. And then after that exercise, if it turns out that there's still a need to do a review of the policy, perhaps, you know, a PDP could be done then, and it could be more targeted to specific issues that might require, you know, an actual PDP to be done. And so the next few slides, I'm not going to go into a lot of detail because they're very pretty detailed, but I just I tried to identify the issues that were raised in the webinar and to break them down into policy issues versus process issues. James, you have a question? Or
I have a meta question. Are we taking questions as we go, or should we? Okay, so on the previous slide, you mentioned something about the overall procedural changes that could be made in lieu of a PDP. My question is, what's the mechanism to do that? And since so many of these procedural issues are just disparities from the different providers and the way that they handle issues and documentations, if not changing the actual policy, how do we get them all to get on the same page with regard to the procedures?
Well, certainly the providers would be involved in that. I mean, as when I think of the expert panels, you'd actually have providers involved. And then we have the supplemental rules that have been adopted and have been changed over the years. We've done a change, for example, for e-filing not that long ago, and that didn't involve a PDP. So you know, those things, could be looked at. One of the recommendations that someone made, I don't recall who it was that there might be useful to explore whether we have a contract with providers, and maybe some of this gets implemented through a contract if that's the way, you know, that the outcome of this panel or this expert discussion. So that's the thing we're talking about. We're looking at it as its implementation of the policy, and we're affecting the implementation as opposed to the policy itself. And once you start, you know, reviewing, you know, the actual policy, then you probably do need to step back and see, you know, whether you need to have a PDP for that if that's, you know, the outcome of this effort.
So, sorry, Margie. So, is there a way to look at the process issues without initiating a PDP? And I think that's maybe where James was going.
Sorry, yeah.
Is there a way to clarify some of the process issues without initiating a PDP?
We believe so. Again, it depends on who's the the target of the clarification, you know, if you will. If it's, you know, say contracted parties and it's something new, then you probably need to be more formal and do, you know, a PDP, right? So if it's the providers and it's how they're, you know, implementing the policy as it's written today, I think there's different mechanisms to do that, and it doesn't have to be a PDP.
Okay, so then what's the mechanism? What's the process by which that would happen? Because right now, if the recommendation is not to initiate a PDP and the GNSL Council supports that, then what?
They could recommend to the board that the board, you know, instruct staff to put together an expert panel. I mean, that's, you know, I think that, look, think of how the IRT came together. It's something like that. I'm not even sure it necessarily has to go up to the board, but I mean, you know, I mean, I think they might want to do it that way. But that's the idea that there would be, perhaps a GNSO resolution that said, you know, we think that something should be done on the process. Why doesn't ICANN, you know, consider putting together this team and coming up with the recommendations on process only, you know?
Thanks, Marge.
So, as I did mention before, I tried to break out the issues policy versus process, and there were some issues that were identified that could be policy-related issues. And I'm not sure necessarily that the community feels that these have to be done, but these are just ones that were raised by some participants in the webinar. One of them being the bad faith requirement, whether you want to change the requirement that you have to prove bad faith registration and use. The word "and" could be, you know, changed with "or," and I know there's different viewpoints on whether that's the right thing to do or not, but that's an example of something that probably we would have to, you know, go through the process of amending the policy itself. There's also a concern that the policy doesn't include safe harbors for free speech and fair use. You know, they in implementation and in the actual decisions, you know, those issues get dealt with, but it's not an express part of the policy. And also the third thing that really struck me as something that was probably a policy issue that would need to be part of a PDP is to include an appeals process in the policy itself. Because right now you can appeal, you know, to a court of, you know, competent jurisdiction, but you don't have a way to appeal it in the policy itself. So those were the few issues that were, you know, in my view, clearly policy issues. Now, I'm not going to go through all of these next slides. There's probably about six of them, but we'll just scroll. If you look at the topics, I want you to see that, you know, there's a lot of issues here. If we were to go through some sort of review of the UDRP, you're talking about a very extensive process with a lot of, you know, legal issues when you're talking about jurisdiction and complaints and timing and language of proceedings. There's a lot here that you know, if it does become, you know, part of a PDP or some other process, is going to require a lot of resources and time from staff and the community members that participate. So you can just
Margie, we got a question here. Staff.
More of a comment, just to remind the stakeholder group. I was a participant with John Berryhill on the UDRP webinar, and prior to that, you'll recall I solicited input from the membership here about what issues, concerns, problems, challenges, and suggestions for improvement that we had around the current UDRP process. And those were compiled and put in the list, and I presented those during the UDRP webinar when I had my few minutes to speak on behalf of the registrar. So I just want to remind that the input from this group was part of these issues list. Thank you.
Okay. And Matt, if you can just keep on scrolling through them, because I'm not gonna read them, but you can see there's, you know, a lot of things here, things like laches and rules related to evidence and, you know, forum shopping. There's, you know, this is this would be quite a big undertaking if we were to you know, go ahead and initiate this kind of review, and then you know. it's questionable, who would really want to spend that much time delving into each of these issues. If we do actually start a PDP, there may need to be some effort in trying to prioritize some of these topics so we're not just randomly hitting, you know, a lot of them, or it could just be a five-year process, three-year process in trying to tackle each of these. There's no prioritization in my list. I'm just merely summarizing the issues that I heard on the webinar. So then finally, if you have comments on the preliminary issue report, you can obviously participate in the public comment forum that's open until July 15th, or participate in the session tomorrow, where we'll go into more depth on the staff recommendations and the reaction to the statements that are made in the issue report. And if you want to hear the webinar, I thought the webinar went really well. There's a link there to the archive that you can, you know, listen in or see the transcript. And that's all I have on the UDRP. Any questions before we move on to Marika?
Anybody? Okay. Thank you, Margie. Actually, Marika, can I ask a question?
Yeah.
Actually, I wanted to go back to the process issue, Margie, on staff recommendations. So is the staff's sort of default handling of any particular issue one that it lets a PDP go forward unless there's really a pretty good reason not to? Or are you making a judgment, you know, proposal by proposal as to whether or not, you know, you're recommending to the GNSO about whether or not it goes forward?
I think we don't have a default position on it. We tend to look at it issue by issue to see, how it fits into what's going on, what the resource issue is, whether there are issues raised. I mean, the only two I've done are vertical integration and this one, but that's on both of those we.
What are you doing wrong?
No, I know. On both of those, we recommended against initiating a PDP, and see what happened. We weren't exactly listened to. Obviously the council has its prerogative to set aside our recommendations, but we try to do an informed opinion and really look at it to see whether, you know, this is the right time to do it and whether, you know, it should be done.
Okay, thank you.
The other thing is we do clarify in the issue report as part of the bylaws requirements whether it's in scope or not. So we make it clear that, yes, it's, you know, and in this case it's obviously within scope to do it if the GNSO council wants to do it. But we just feel that, you know, given all these things we talked about, that it's probably best not to do it right now.
All right, thank you. Okay, other questions for Margie? Okay, Marika?
Right, so moving on to IRTP Part B. I think I already spoke to you about that as well at the last meeting, but I think at that stage where we're still talking about a proposed final report, I don't think I need to talk to you about the background, just maybe to mention this is the second in a series of five PDPs. Group was looking at the number of charter questions, amongst others dealing with the registrar lock status and whether additional provisions need to be developed for a number of incidences that might happen, like hijacking or inappropriate transfers. So the PDP already started some time ago. I think we're almost on our two-year anniversary now. There was an initial report, a proposed final report, and we got quite a few comments on both versions of that report. And you know, the working group worked through those and adapted the report accordingly and actually submitted its final report to the GNSO Council earlier this year and came up with 9 recommendations. So just to give you a broad overview of those recommendations, there are actually 4 recommendations there that talk about concrete changes or clarifications or additions to the existing IRTP, one dealing with the creation of a transfer emergency action contact, one relating to changes to Section 3 of the IRTP, one changing denial reason number 6, and one proposing to delete denial reason number 7. There are 2 recommendations that recommend requesting an issue report, one on the topic of thick who is, and one on the issue of change of control linked together with denial reasons number 8 and 9 of the IRTP. One recommendation relates to promotion of an ASAC report. One recommendation actually recommends deferring consideration of an issue to actually the review of the UDRP if that should happen. And one recommendation relates to a request for staff to develop a plan in relation to the standardization and clarification of who is status messages. I have all the recommendations here, but I think all of you are probably already quite familiar with this, and I don't know if you're actually going to discuss the motion that's on the table, so I don't know if you really want me to go into detail in any of these.
Can you just do a quick overview of it?
Okay, quickly go through it.
Yeah.
As I said, you know, I think one of the main changes coming out of this is probably the requirement to have a transfer emergency contact that registrars need to provide, that its purpose is to have a way to establish contact between registrars in the case of an emergency. I think very important to know that this is only in the case of emergency, only to be used by contracted parties, so not by registrants. And the requirement will be to provide a response within 4 hours of the initial request. Again, important to point out, it's just responding. That doesn't mean that you have to resolve the issue within 4 hours. It's just a question of picking up the phone within 4 hours of a request being received. I said the second here is just a recommendation to actually promote some of the proactive measures that are outlined in an ESSEC report that registrants should take into account that will help prevent hijacking. And then moving on to, as mentioned, the request for the issue report. I think there's been some discussion on that in the GNSO Council on Saturday on this specific, or on Sunday, on this specific recommendations, where you know, some have argued, well, you know, why don't you just go to the registry operators or registry operator that is affected by this and just tell them to change to ThicoWiz? But the recommendation of the working group is actually, well, it would be useful to do a PDP to actually assess whether you know changing to ThicoWiz is a good idea or not. From an IRTP perspective, I think most in the working group agreed that it would be a really good idea because it would solve a lot of issues, but there might be unintended consequences or other areas that you know need to be taken into account before such a decision is taken. So that's why the working group recommended an issue report on that. Again, the working group also discussed a lot on how change of control comes in, currently being used. You know, transfers are being used to demonstrate as well ownership, change of control of domain names, by especially the aftermarket. So, and as there currently is no specific definition of that concept in the IRTP, they also agree that it would be good to do an issue report on that specific item and link that together with the locking procedures as they are currently described in the denial reason number 8 and 9. And if I remember correctly, they relate to you know the 60-day lock that may be applied following a transfer, and I think as well, is it also 60 days after creation? After the creation of a domain name registration. I think we're going to pass on the slides.
Right? Michaela, sorry. Did I see your hand up? Michaela?
No? I think it's just from a hand. Then there's another recommendation to modify Section 3 of the IRTP. That provision currently says that the losing registrar may notify the registrant of the transfer out, and the proposal is to change that to must or has to, basically to require that notification. The idea behind it is if that notification is done prior to the transfer taking place, if there is any conflict between the admin and the registrant, it might come out at that time instead of after the fact, when it would be much more complicated and you will get into the undo of a transfer scenario. Then the last one is the clarification of IRTP reason for denial 6, making it clear that the registrant has to give an informed opt-in express consent, and also noting that the registrant must be able to have the lock removed upon reasonable notice and authentication. As mentioned, there is one issue deferred to the UDRP review, should that happen, that relates to the locking of domain names that are subject to UDRP proceedings. A request to have staff prepare a proposal that would deal with standardizing and clarifying who is status messages regarding registrar lock status. And then there's another recommendation that recommends deleting IRTP reason for denial 7, as in its current state actually cannot even be invoked, and instead replace that by a new provision that would basically outline how a and when domains may be locked or unlocked. And again, in this in relation to the second part, that will be a staff proposal for new language that would come back to the GNSO Council then for consideration. So a motion is on the GNSO Council's agenda for Wednesday. As I said, I don't know if you'll be reviewing or discussing that later today. The motion was made by Tim, so he can give you further information about that as well. It basically recommends adopting the different recommendations that are outlined here. As I said, the four items that would go directly to changing the existing consensus policy if and once adopted by the board. There are two items where staff is requested to come up with further plans and proposals on those items, which then would be considered by the council for adoption. So I think that's it. I have some things here on the where you can find the report and how we address the comments. So I don't know if any questions on the IRGP.
Elliot?
Yeah, there's one significant change in policy contained here that really has roots in the early days of registrar, which is losing registrar must notify. Well, there was always a may. The history around that was to stop the incumbent at the time and some other registrars from obstructing through confusing messages to the registrant. I'm hoping that one of the staff takeaways is to be very proscribed around what the losing registrar may say to the registrant, because to include anything other than a very bare information that this is happening significantly runs the risk of both confusing registrants and having this be a backdoor way to market back to losing customers. So I really urge you to take that point in particular.
Okay, yeah, I've heard of it. It's actually not something I think that the working group provided any detail on in its report, but I've heard you, and I think as well, staff goes away and writes an implementation plan, so if it's not clear, make sure to make that comment also before the board considers this.
Make a comment. You just said make a comment. Make a comment where? In the GNSO meeting or to the working group?
No, there will be. I think the first opportunity is to make the comment is when the board considers these proposals, provided that the GNSO Council adopts them, there will be a public comment period. So there's a first opportunity there to specifically make that comment. Once the board adopts it, staff develops an implementation plan, which normally is as well passed back for public comments discussion. So I think there are several steps. If indeed it hasn't been taken into account, by the time we get there, there are different opportunities to, again, make that point. But I've heard you, and definitely we'll take it back.
Tim?
Marika, let me just interrupt just for a moment. It's already dealt with. I mean, my understanding is what the recommendation is that the losing registrar must send the FOI. Is that right?
FOA.
Right. It didn't sound right. And the FOA has already been defined in policy, and you can't mark it, and blah, 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 all that. So it's not creating anything new. The FOA is what it is. It's just saying that instead of optionally sending it, you must send it. But even now, if you optionally send an FOA, you can't mark it. It's very proscribed. It's actually defined in the policy. The transfer policy itself. So this is just saying you must send it. You can't change it. You can't or anything
so
else
that,
of that nature.
All that is doing, if I understand that correctly, Tim, is saying to the registrant, here is the FOA, we have received it.
Correct.
Thank you.
Okay. Just to clarify, Elliot, just speaking to that, it changes may to must. And it's made it, you are... Yeah, but that's all it does.
Anyone else? All right.
Well, I'm glad we already clarified that issue without having to do comments. So moving on to the next policy development process that's in its final phase, at least from a GNSO Council perspective. Post-exploration domain name recovery, I think, again, I've spoken to you about this one several times, so I won't dwell on this one too much. Again, this working group followed a relatively similar path as the IRTP working group, you know, produced an initial report, produced a proposed final report, and based on the input received, finalized its report, and the report itself has 18 recommendations. I think, as mentioned before, I mean, the thing, you know, it wasn't an easy working group, a lot of different views. The working group did work very hard and you know, in the end, did come to consensus on all the recommendations. And I think with the belief that all the recommendations will provide additional guarantees to registrants, our aim to improve registrant education and comprehension, and I think the working group also believes that they are in line with current registrar practices and therefore will have minimal impact on most registrars and other affected stakeholders. So the recommendations are grouped together basically in category, although they also relate back to the different charter questions that were asked from the working group. I think you know the working group struggled a lot as well in trying to get the right definitions around the different concepts and making sure that it's understood, you know, who is the person or the registrant that is entitled to renew the name, domain name after expiration. So they spent a lot of time getting the right definition there, and they've come up with the registered name holder at expiration, and there's a quite lengthy explanation as well what that exactly means. So there are a couple of recommendations that relate to post-expiration behavior and ability to renew. So there's a minimum of 8 days after expiration for renewal by the registrant that needs to be provided. That 8-day period can take place at any point in the 45-day grace period, provided that the name is not deleted. There's always the option for the registrar to delete at any point in time after expiration. Also recommendation that the website must explicitly say that the registration has expired and provide instructions on how the registration can be redeemed. And also recommendation noting that the RNHAE cannot be prevented from renewing as a result of WHOIS changes, basically addressing some of the but what currently happens is there are provisions in agreements that allow the registrar or a third party to renew on behalf of the registrant that shouldn't prevent that the original registrant to actually renewing it at the end of the day. So there are quite a few recommendations that relate to registrar disclosure and expiration warnings, following on, I think, from provisions that already exist in the EDDP in relation to RGP fees. There's now as well a recommendation to clearly display the fees charged for renewal. Clear information needs to be provided on how notifications are going to be delivered pre- and post-expiration to the registrant. There's now clearer requirements that at least two notices need to be sent prior to expiration at set time frames and one after expiration. Also knows that notification shouldn't be done by methods whereby the registrant has to do something proactively, like you know going into the registrar system or something like that. And then there are a couple of best practice recommendations that I think mainly deal with ways in which you know registrants can provide additional information to make sure that they receive notices by you know providing a second point of contact, as well for you know whitelisting the email addresses from which notifications are going to come, and you know providing secondary email addresses. Then there are a couple of recommendations relating to the redemption grace period. I think the most important one there is basically making the redemption grace period a consensus policy, so it applies to all GTLDs apart from sponsored GTLDs. And there's a recommendation not to allow a transfer of a domain name during the RGP. That was one of the charter questions of that working group, whether it should be allowed. And the working group said, no, it's probably a bad idea because there are a lot of difficulties with that and probably not better not to go down that path. And I said then there are a couple of recommendations that relate to registrant education and awareness. There's a recommendation that ICANN should develop educational materials on how to properly steward a domain name and prevent unintended loss, together with other parties that are interested in this topic, so you know, with registrars, ALAC, and others in the community. And then as well a requirement, if such content is developed and you know agreed by the different parties, then registrars are required to link and distribute that information. And then as well as a recommendation that once all these recommendations are adopted and implemented, that ICANN compliance should provide regular updates to the GNSO Council on the implementation and effectiveness of the proposed recommendations, so that the GENIUS Council can also make an assessment on how these recommendations are working in practice, and whether at any point in time there's a need to do follow-up work or review the policy. So what are the next steps? There's a draft motion that has been developed and I think has been shared via the council to the different representatives. So I think the hope is that some groups might already discuss this here in Singapore, and then it can be possibly considered at the next meeting of the GENIUS Council in July. And again, the recommendations will then need to go to the board for its consideration. So here are the links to the final report. Are there any questions on this issue? No? Then moving on to the next item. This is very brief. The title is not very brief, but the discussion paper on the creation of
no
non-binding...
acronym?
But I don't have one yet. I'm waiting for suggestions.
That needs an acronym.
Definitely. So... this is basically an effort that stems from the final report of the Registration of Use Policies Working Group. And one of their recommendations, I think that was relating to the malicious abuse title, was for that ICA should consider, or the GENIUS Council should consider, the creation of non-binding best practices to help registrars and registries address the illicit use of domain names. So the council decided to act on that by actually requesting ICANN staff to prepare a discussion paper on this topic, which it could then use to consider further steps to address this specific issue. So we have been working on this discussion paper, but with all the other reports that we had to finish for this meeting, we weren't able to finalize it. But in order to take advantage of the opportunity and having everyone here, we thought it might be helpful to provide our initial thinking on this and provide you with a broad outline of the issues that we think should be included in such a discussion paper. So we'll be presenting that actually Thursday from 11 to 12:30, if I'm not mistaken. You'll have the link there so you can find all the details there. So basically there we'll just provide an overview of what we think should be in there. We have a preliminary inventory on the... Do you want to...
I didn't finish.
No, I hadn't finished yet, but...
I just wanted to point out that I'll be... I've been volunteered to participate on that and provide a registrar perspective on some of these best practices. I've got a few things put together, but after today's meeting with law enforcement, I think that's going to attract a lot more attention than it might have otherwise, so I would really appreciate any thoughts or suggestions or bullet points from this group. If you can send those to the list today or tomorrow, what are your generic recommendations or advice for registrars about best practices for abuse? I think it'll be really, really helpful. Thanks.
So as James said, we start off with the presentation from staff, going through the different issues that we think we should cover. There's also, we have a preliminary inventory of some of the practices we've been able to identify from, ESSAC reports, APWG documents, so as a starting point, and then indeed we'll have different community representatives, giving their perspective. The idea is to have a very open and informal discussion, so you're all invited to come and contribute. I think the idea is really to give us additional ideas and thoughts on what we should consider as part of this discussion paper, so we can make sure as well that the different views are represented, and we can come with some concrete ideas back to the GENIUS Council on how to take this this effort further. If you already want to know more about, we did give a more detailed presentation already to the GENIUS Council on Saturday, so I'm sure those slides are already up. So you can have a look already. I think it already outlines basically the different issues that we're considering as part of that. So have a look at that. And if you can't go, feel free as well to catch me in the hallway or send me an email afterwards if you have any further thoughts on this item. And happy to consider those. Then just very briefly, last item. There is a proposal for a revised GENIUS policy development process. This is an effort that stems from the GENIUS improvements that I think we've all been involved in at some stage or form. So this working group looked at how to revamp the PDP to make it more effective, more efficient, following the working group model. and develop concrete proposals for that, accompanied with an implementation and transition plan. So again, the main point here is that there's a final report now out that concludes 48 recommendations, but also includes a proposal for a new Annex A of the ICANN bylaws, which outlines the PDP process, and also has a PDP manual, which would be incorporated as part of the GNSO operating rules. I think what I really wanted to highlight here, this report is actually out for public comment at the moment, before the GNSO Council will consider it for adoption. Comments may be submitted until the 9th of July, so if you have any views on this, please share them. We gave a more detailed presentation on the report and the actual recommendations, the main changes in the Sunday session of the GNSO. So if you're interested in getting that overview and just listening to that, you can go to the schedule and find there the recording and the slides and have a look at that. So once the GNSO Council looks at all the comments, they'll need to decide whether any further changes will need to be made to the report or whether it's ready to be considered. And once it's adopted again, it will need to go to the board for its approval as it relates to bylaw changes. And on the next slide, you can find basically the link to the public comment forum and the final report and some other background information. And I think that's it from me. Yep.
All right, questions from Marika? Oh, we're all in the post-lunch coma. Okay, Liz?
So the good news is I really don't have much of a WHOIS update today, and I don't have any slides, which is probably a refreshing change. Anyone have any questions? No, what I did want to just briefly mention to you all, and I'll be sending something more official out within the next month or so, is that one of the studies that the council has agreed to go forward with, it's actually more of a survey at this point to solicit interest, but to look at privacy and proxy relay and reveal requests. And the firm that's going to be looking at this, InterAisle, is searching for proxy and privacy providers to participate in the study once the study actually gets going. So I've approached a couple of you offline about your willingness to participate, those of you that do offer a privacy service. I asked Mason to send out a formal request once we're ready, but I do want to just take this moment to encourage you, if you do offer a privacy service, to consider participating. I know some of you have reservations about the study, and may be concerned about some of the conclusions, but I think the study can only be improved by your participation. So would really look forward to your involvement, and if you have any questions offline or any reservations, please feel free to contact me, and there'll be more information forthcoming. I'll just briefly touch on the fact that separately we have a drafting team that's just been formed to take some next steps on the WHOIS service requirements report that was produced last year. Susan, I think you're on that group. I'm not sure if any other registrars signed up to participate, but it's just getting started, and it's really just going to solicit community views on those potential technical requirements for basically a replacement protocol to WHOIS. So more to follow on that probably in the next meeting, and happy to answer any questions.
All right, questions for Liz? Boy, we are rocking in this meeting. Okay. All right. All right. Yeah, and we are. We're right on time. All right.
I'll ask a question.
John comes out of nowhere. All right, go ahead, John.
Liz, do you have a reference definition of reasonable evidence of actionable harm that you've developed for this, or?
No, we're just using the, that language, understanding that people have different views about what's required there.
Okay, that's it? Yeah. Tom?
Do you have a definition of a proxy service?
We do, actually, and it's the RAA definition. I think it's the definition that says they're the registered name holder of record. And it's in the RFP. I can get it for you. But it's to distinguish the proxy from the privacy service.
So if I'm a law firm, listing myself as registrar, I'm a proxy service?
If there is a beneficial user other than yourself, yes.
Anyone else? All right, Marika, Margie, Liz, thank you all very much. As always, appreciate it. Okay, so schedule-wise, we're going to meet with the board in about 15 minutes. Before we do that, we have a housekeeping item that we didn't get to this morning because he wasn't here. But our friend JC is finally in the room after I harangued him to come in here. And I know I mentioned this morning that we talked a bit about the XCOM and terms and that kind of thing. JC just completed his third term as vice chair of the stakeholder group, and he rotated off. Staten has capably taken his place. But I wanted to take a minute and on behalf of everybody here say a thank you to JC for 3 years of very good service and contributing his expertise. So, JC, thank you for all your good work. We have a gift for you. Yeah. So this is an engraved pen with your name and your office on it.
Wow.
So you enjoy that?
I'm sure. Oh, yeah.
Speech.
Yeah, that's right. You got to talk.
Well, the first thing I'm going to say, it's good thing I finally showed up. So thanks for that, all of you. The 3 years have been extremely rich. I had a blast sitting on those chairs and being with you guys at every ACON meetings. I'm sorry I couldn't be here this morning. Unfortunately, my new company is a bit on the other side of the aisle, so as much as I will continue contributing to the registrar stakeholder group, it might be a sign of things to come. Our industry will be experience some changes. I hope the registrars will be stronger for it. And I know that Staten will help you, and the rest of the XCOM, obviously, will help you in that regard. Thank you all. It was great to serve you for these years and be seeing you wherever and in whatever capacity.
Thank you so much. All right. Thank you, JC. Okay, we're meeting with the board at 2:15 in the Canning? Is that right, Tim? Canning meeting room?
Yeah, I think it's the middle of the three ballroom rooms.
Okay.
I believe. It's either the middle or the one on the left.
You okay.
Know, it's either next to the GAC or the other side.
All right. I understand there's a protocol that we have to follow. Peter is chairing the meeting and...
I think they want the XCOM up at the...
At the table.
The table and everyone else...
Okay.
Around. That's my
okay.
Understanding.
So we've been asked to give some agenda items. We're going to talk, as we discussed this morning, we're going to talk about the RAA. We're going to talk a bit about the .NET agreement, and then we'll talk about the same risk issue that we discussed with your team today, Tim. And that's pretty much it. I mean, we had to submit that in advance, so our agenda is pretty limited to those items. And we have an hour with them, so we'll go 2:15 to 3:15. We'll have a 15-minute break until 3:30, and then we'll reconvene here at 3:30. Okay? All right, so we'll see everybody over in that meeting room in 15 minutes from now. All right, thank you.